So, the series on the Four Noble Truths. 2 weeks ago, I spoke about the first noble truth, which is the truth of dukkha. Dukkha, often translated as suffering, but it's not the best translation. We can maybe say unsatisfactoriness of life. Not all that is dukkha is suffering. Sometimes nice things can be dukkha too. They can be unsatisfactory. And so the second noble truth is that there is a cause for dukkha. And the cause is craving. And then the third noble truth is that there is an end to suffering. We can end dukkha, which is awakening. And then the fourth noble truth is the path leading to the end of dukkha. So it's the Noble Eightfold Path. So tonight we'll look at this cause for dukkha, this unsatisfactoriness, the craving. And now, last time I also read a little piece on from the Sutta about the first noble truth, and now I'll read it about the second noble truth. And the Buddha says, "Now this, practitioners, is the noble truth of the origin of dukkha. It is this craving which leads to renewed existence, accompanied by delight and lust, seeking delight here and there. That is craving for sensual pleasures, craving for existence, craving for extermination." That's what the Buddha says about this noble truth. And then the word craving in Pali is tanha, and it literally means thirst. So, this thirst, kind of a nice way to see it. You're thirsty for something. And so the Buddha names these three types of craving in this sutta: the craving for sensual pleasures, craving for existence, and the craving for extermination. And another translation for this last one is craving to end existence, which is kind of poignant for today. Although it's mostly referred to as in our own experience, not so much in other people, for as far as I know. So I'd like to start with craving for sensual pleasures. And then there's Sariputta, one of the senior disciples of the Buddha. He explains that a little further in a different sutta, what craving for sensual pleasures is. He says, "There are these six classes of craving: craving for forms, craving for sounds, craving for odors, craving for flavors, craving for tangibles, and craving for mind objects." So you might recognize here the six senses, mind being the sixth sense. And craving can arise at any of these six sense doors. Like the craving for the sunset, or craving for hearing beautiful music, craving for the smell of a flower, or the taste of ice cream, or soft, warm clothes, or peaceful mind. These can all arise. And like Bob was saying earlier, you're craving for respect, for being seen. And so this feeling of craving can actually feel pretty good, especially if the craving gets satisfied. You know, when we crave chocolate cake, and then we get it, then it feels pretty good actually. But even though it might feel good, it might be like a pleasant feeling tone, it's still kind of unsatisfactory, and that unsatisfactory to so dukkha, because it will end. And when it ends, then all pleasure has faded, and then a few different scenarios might happen, like it has ended, and then we might be back at baseline, like we were before the chocolate cake. Or we might start craving more chocolate cake, so we want another piece. So we're still not satisfied. Or we might feel empty or unsatisfied, or even like aversion. Like we might have eaten too much. We might feel aversive. And so there's no lasting satisfactoriness in craving. And sometimes craving does not feel good. For example, when we don't get what we want, then it feels really unpleasant to crave. Like maybe the shooter might have had unpleasant craving and he couldn't get what he wanted. But it can also be super simple and tiny, like craving warmth on a cold day, you know, not being able to get to it if we're stuck waiting for the bus stop at the bus stop or something on a cold day. And so both those types of craving, when it feels good and when it doesn't feel good, it's both unsatisfactory. And when we look carefully, even at those moments that craving feels good, then we might even be able to discern that there's some agitation going on when we crave. And it's something that can be pretty subtle. So so it's something that we can investigate for ourselves. You don't have to believe me, but it can be experienced. And it's important to make a distinction between craving and just enjoying things, because there's nothing wrong with enjoying things. Like, you know, when we enjoy something, when we enjoy that chocolate cake, then there's not necessarily craving for a chocolate cake. So it's important to see, am I just enjoying this? Or is there actually a lot of craving going on? It might also be that we're just enjoying it and then it turns into craving. But so simple sense pleasures, just simple enjoyment of those are okay. Else, you know, our life would be pretty gray and grim. So please keep enjoying stuff. And so let's move on to craving for existence. And Joseph Goldstein also knows this the desire to be. So the craving for existence and this desire to be. And so this can be pretty simple, like, you know, this is the tomorrow I'm going to do groceries. So we're kind of projecting something into the future, planning a vacation or planning to lose weight. It's pretty pervasive. It's kind of this embedded in our everyday moment to moment life, this craving to be, desire to be. And we're often leaning into the future, becoming something in the future. Whether it's in the next moment or in, you know, next year or in 10 years. And there's a beautiful quote from the Buddha about it. He says, "Don't run back to the past. Don't hope for the future. What's past is left behind. The future has not arrived." It's a really nice invitation to be in this moment. And of course, we do need to plan things and we need to, you know, live our life. So we need to kind of basically become something in the future. You know, this is not about not becoming, avoiding becoming, but it's more about seeing the process, being aware of it, because we can't really avoid it. As long as we're not like fully enlightened, we can't really avoid this becoming. And we can especially be aware of it when it is tied to the strong sense of self. Like this me that needs to be something, this I that needs to get this promotion, or this I that needs to be the best in school, or I that needs to be strong and assertive, or And there's numerous ways that we identify with all these certain roles and identities, etc. So just notice how it shows up for you. How do you become? How do you identify and become something in the future? And then craving for non-existence, a third form of craving that the Buddha talks about. So this is what, when we don't want to exist, or we don't want a certain situation in our lives. Like this feeling of, you know, if only I could disappear. And in Dutch there's this expression, and from the Netherlands there's this expression like, oh, just sink into the ground, like I just want to disappear into the ground, like right now, kind of feeling. And sometimes, you know, symptoms of depression might be related to this craving for non-existence. Like not wanting to live anymore, can, it's kind of the strongest way that this can manifest. We can also see it in just tiny moments, like not wanting to face this specific moment, not wanting to feel this feeling, not wanting to feel this pain. Yeah, just wanting to kind of skip the moment, skip what's here. And also here we can be aware of this sense of self popping up again. It's like, oh, this I that doesn't want to face this moment, like it's happening to this me. And so be aware of this sense of identification, because that is kind of, helping the suffering, helping the dukkha, it's kind of supporting the dukkha to arise. So these are the three ways of forms of craving that the Buddha identified. The craving for sense pleasures, the craving for becoming, and the craving for non-existence. And there are some ways to work with craving. And I already pointed out maybe a few here and there, but there are some other ways as well. And there's this sutta, the Satipatthana Sutta, that you guys are listening to in the other weeks. And there it says, one who has craving understands I have craving in me. When they don't have craving in them, they understand I don't have craving in me. They understand how craving arises, how when it's already arisen, it's given up, and how once it is given up, it doesn't arise again in the future. So the Buddha points here to simply kind of knowing whether craving is present or absent. And no drama, no judgment, like not like, oh, stupid me, craving has arisen. No, just knowing it is there, it has arisen, or it's not there, it's present or it's not present. And we can also look at, wonder for ourselves, like, how does craving actually arise? What ways does it come about? How can it be abundant? What kind of things help for it to be abandoned? And then also, how can we prevent it from arising in the future? So these are some important questions that we can use in our practice, reflect on every once in a while if we feel that craving is kind of a topic for us. So, you know, I can offer some pointers, but ultimately it's good to investigate this for ourselves. And we each might need different approaches at different times. But just a few pointers. And one way to prevent the craving from arising is what is called guarding the sense doors. And when we guard the sense doors, we don't let in what might possibly lead to craving. For example, if you really like cookies, or if you like potato chips or something, you don't buy it. And then if you ever are at home and you think, oh, I really like a cookie now, or I really like some potato chips, and it's not there, then the craving can just kind of subside because we can't fulfill it. So yeah, it's just there, and then you're like, yeah, I can't do anything right now, or, you know, except for going to the grocery store, but that's kind of like a hurdle. So that is what we can do to prevent, just guard the sense doors. There's also this example of this monk who, this, I don't know who it was, one of the Achans from the Thai forest tradition, who promised himself not to look at women for the 3-month retreat in the summer. And so he was guarding his sense door. I just He's not gonna look up if there's women around. He's just gonna stare at the ground. And you know, that's a way of guarding the sense doors to not let the craving arise. Just don't look at it. That's also a way. But that's temporary, of course, a temporary solution, because as soon as you start looking again, if that's your object of craving, then the desire will come back. So. And if craving has arisen, then we can just use our Vipassana practice, be mindful of it, investigate what it feels like in body and mind. That can be a very useful way of working with craving. And then we can look at the causes and conditions for craving to come up. Like maybe it's just simply the thought about the cookie that makes the craving arise. And so if we then direct our thoughts somewhere else, distract ourselves, that might be useful. And then another way would be to see impermanence. Like craving comes and goes. It's not gonna last forever. That's a very useful one, because the craving really wants us to to act on it. But if we just write it out, so to speak, if we just sit with it, it's just gonna disappear. It's really cool to try this out, especially with something smaller, like a cookie, or something that is somewhat easy for you. Just don't act on it and see how the craving is just gonna disappear if we don't act on it. It's not gonna stay there forever. Now, I like to add with a quote from Sylvia Borstein, a meditation teacher. If I want to free myself from endless cycles of struggling with temptation, I need to keep rediscovering that the pain of the struggle is greater than the pain of the desire. If I develop the habit of restraining myself, I'll enjoy the relief of feeling the desires pause. And I'll remember that desires are not the problem. Feeling pushed around by them is. I'll continue to have desires, of course, because I'm alive, but they'll be modest in their demands.